This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. On this New Year's Eve edition of our show, Animal Week continues with cartoon animals. Cartoonist Gary Larson has dreamed up all sorts of weird creatures for his surreal comic, The Far Side. Many of his comics have mocked human foibles by showing the world through the points of view of animals and insects. In appreciation of his work, scientists have named a butterfly and a biting louse after him. The Far Side was syndicated in more than 1,900 newspapers around the world and translated into 17 languages before Larson retired from drawing it about 3 years ago. 21 of his Far Side books have been bestsellers. He's currently finishing up his second animated film. I spoke with him last spring after the publication of his illustrated book about a family of earthworms called There's a Hair in My Dirt. I asked him about the inspiration for the story.
Maybe this goes back to my childhood, because I always had an affinity for animals that lived in swamps and especially snakes. And I always liked snakes and caught them and brought them home. And I had very tolerant parents, I think, that allowed you to bring things into the house like that and set up little cages and terrariums or whatever. And that has always stayed with me. I've even on into my 20s, I had a real strong interest in reptiles and amphibians. And when you do that, you start to get obviously encounter a lot of reactions from people who walk into your place and are horror stricken about what they see. It always made you feel like you had to explain yourself. And I just never had any fear of those things at all. And I thought they were beautiful. And it started me thinking about, is it me or is it you? Why is someone else looking at this and saying it's ugly or whatever? I started to realize that maybe we all bring prejudice to nature as well when we decide what's beautiful and what's ugly, or what's dramatic and impressive and what's not.
One of your comics is of a snake that's coiled up, but it's sitting on a couch in a living room. And, of course, the snake has the same patterns. The snake's skin is the same pattern as the couch's upholstery.
Right.
So the couch is kind of, the snake is kind of like camouflaged in the living room.
Right.
The way snakes usually are camouflaged in the woods. Did you have snakes in the house that got out and hid out in the living room?
Oh, I did. I used to, they would get loose every once in a while. And my folks were never real pleased about that, but still, they never put their foot down. But yeah, well, I usually could find them eventually.
Usually, all right.
Yeah,
sounds awful.
Yeah, I know my. I lost an 8-foot boa constrictor once in our house, and my dad and I went on a search for it, and we were looking everywhere and could not find this thing. And my mom was gone. She wasn't even aware, but I knew I had to find it before she got home. And I remember I was in the living room looking behind the couch or whatever, and I heard my dad scream from another room. And he yelled, "I found it," and then the scream came out of him.
What happened?
Well, nothing. Actually, the snake didn't do anything. He had reached up. My mom had like a sewing machine or something. And he had reached up inside. The cabinet that it was in. And he didn't look. He just put his hand up inside this thing and was feeling. And he put his hand right on it. And it was really funny, because he had this reaction was to first of all say that he found it, and then it sort of hit him that he'd found it. and this scream.
In a lot of your comics, you try to see the world through the eyes of insects and animals, and the human world looks, often very absurd when seen through the eyes of insects and animals. In one of your very funny comics, there's a movie theater filled with insects, and they're watching a horror movie called Return of the Killer Windshield.
Right.
I think it's very funny. What kind of things do you wonder about when you wonder about what an insect's point of view is like? Do you spend a lot of time doing that, thinking, I wonder how the world looks to the insects that we kill when we drive quickly on the highway?
Well, I suppose I do. But, it's always been confusing to me as well, is to try to understand how or where this idea came from, how I got there.
With the idea of that particular cartoon or just it, ideas in general?
In general, because now, I mean, I'm thinking about the cartoon you mentioned, and I'm going, well, how did I think of that? And why did that come to me? But I imagine I am starting to think about their world and looking at it and what it would be like and what are the threats and dangers and encounters that they have in their world and what do I know about them and their lives and life cycles and start thinking like that.
You have done so many comics, Gary Larson, about insects and creatures and wildlife and animals and so on, that there's been a couple of creatures named after you. One of them is a louse, as in lice.
Yeah.
And you reprinted in one of your books the letter that the biologist sent you, the biologist who wanted to name the louse after you. And he said, let me warn you, I do not work on cute insects. I am a specialist on the order Malaphaga, which is the chewing lice. I hope I pronounced that right.
Right.
But were you honored?
I was very honored. Yeah, I was. That was a great compliment. I don't know if everyone feel that way, but I did. I mean, and the fact that it was a chewing louse was fine.
Did you get to ever see this chewing louse?
I've never seen it, no.
And what's it officially called?
You mean as in like a common name or what?
Well, now that it's named after you, is it called the Gary Larson louse?
No, it's Larsoni, I think, is the species or subspecies name on it. And I can't, right now, it's caught me off guard. I can't think of the genus name.
And you have a butterfly named after you, too?
Yeah.
And what's that?
I sort of forget what that is. I don't know too much about the butterfly. Frankly, I was more drawn to the louse.
We've been talking about real creatures. I want to talk about monsters a little bit. You have some great monster comics that you've done over the years. And one of them, a monster couple is sitting at the kitchen table. They're drinking coffee. And Mr. Monster says, "Dang, look at the time. And I got to be in little Billy Harrison's closet before nightfall." did you think that there were lots of monsters in your house when you were a boy? Hiding out?
I did. I was, well, I'll tell you this. I had a real fear of my closet when I was a kid. And I was convinced that something lived in my closet. And I had this little ritual as a result that every night when I went to bed, I made sure that the closet doors, I had two sliding doors, I made sure they were completely shut before I went to bed. And one night, I was in bed, and had my reading lamp on, and I think I was like reading a comic book or something. And I looked up to check on the closet because I was always checking on the closet, and the door was open like half an inch or so. And I just was mortified. I couldn't believe that I had done this. I had overlooked it, and. Of course, I also knew that I couldn't get up and go shut the door because that's just what the thing inside wanted me to do. And I didn't want to walk across the room to turn the light on. And so I just laid there and I was really in a cold sweat, wondering what to do about this. And I went back to reading for a while. And I looked up again, like half a minute later, and I wasn't sure, but I thought that maybe the door was now a little wider, that it opened a little. But if it had, it was very subtle. And I looked down again and looked up once more, and this time I was convinced it was like now like an inch open, wide open. And now all I could do is just stare at it, and I was just staring at this closet, and I found myself trying to look into this black slit in the into the closet, and eventually I could make out an eye staring back at me, just one eye looking at me, and this primal scream came out of me, and at the same time that I was screaming, the door just slid open very slowly, just before my eyes, and my brother stepped out. I don't know how long he'd been hidden in there, but he knew I had this fear, and he was just milking it out.
Oh, he had your number.
Oh boy, did he? Yeah.
So did that reinforce or end your fear of the closet?
Oh, it didn't end anything for me.
What did you expect the monsters would look like, since you've drawn a lot of monsters over the years?
I think the monsters that I saw in my mind were very werewolf-like, I think.
Lots of hair, big fangs.
Yeah.
Partly human, partly animal.
Actually, and I realize again, my older brother had a big influence on me, because he had when we shared a bedroom, he had a dream one night in which, and he woke up screaming, and my mom came running in to see what was wrong, and he described this dream to her of being in a basement somewhere, and this wolf that walked on its hind legs was trying to get him, and the wolf kind of shuffled its feet, and he could hear him coming, and he described the sound of these feet going shh, 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 down the hallway toward him. And when it finally showed up, it was this huge wolf on its hind legs, and it didn't have any pupils. It just had pure white eyes. And it became sort of famous in our household as known as the wolf with the pure white eyes. And he completely forgot about it after he woke up. But for me, his dream haunted me for the longest time. And I think I kind of absorbed his dream, that story, and worried about that wolf somewhere in our house for years.
Now, as an adult, you came up for one of your cartoons with a good device to protect against monsters. It's the monster snorkel. And
yeah.
It allows a child to stay under the covers, hidden from the monsters, while still breathing through this snorkel. And, you know, in reading that, it made me think that, you know, in my fear of monster era, I had to vigilantly stay with my head outside of the covers, because as long as I was watching, they probably wouldn't come. See, so if I was under the covers, that's when I'd be vulnerable.
Oh, no, that was very different from my own private version of how to survive. I could have suffocated maybe some nights. I just did not want to expose any part of me, I thought.
It's interesting that you were on the one hand so attracted to, you know, like snakes and kind of creepy, crawly type things that would scare a lot of people. And on the other hand, you were really afraid of monsters.
Mm-hmm. Well, literally, it was. I guess that's the difference between day and night for me.
Oh, sure, yeah,
because
right.
Yeah, but in the daylight, I was into nature, and everything. It was, I read books on biology and natural history, and I studied about snakes and other animals. I mean, I was really into that. But boy, when the sun went down, it's like, oh, this is another world.
You have a comic. You know, we've spoken of your brother a little bit, and some of the practical jokes and so on. He played on you. You have a cartoon where the character, who I assume is based on you, is tied to a tree, while the older brother is coming at him with a match so large that it looks more like a torch than a match. Did your brother like do things to torture you?
Oh, well, I had to watch out for myself, I guess. I was often saved by the bathroom, which was the only room with a lock on it, of course, to escape. But mostly things like hiding in the closet, mm-hmm. whatever. But
yeah.
Sometimes it got physical, but.
If you don't mind my asking, I know one of the books is dedicated to the memory of your brother. What happened to him?
Oh, he had a heart attack about 4 years ago, a massive heart attack, and died, and caught us all off guard. And he was, now when we look back on it, we realize he was, overweight, and he had high blood pressure and high cholesterol, and a lot of things going against him, and still, we were all sort of shocked. He was 46.
That's young.
Yeah. So.
Do you still do cartoons about him, or do you feel like that would be off limits now? Or?
Oh, no, I don't think it would be off limits. I think these are some of my memories, and I wouldn't want to ignore them, I guess, and he wouldn't want me to.
My guest is Gary Larson, the creator of the Far Side comic strip. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Gary Larson, creator of the Far Side comic strip. The strip originated in the San Francisco Chronicle nearly 20 years ago. Was there a first comic that you can think of that got this really big reaction and made you realize, oh, people are paying attention and they're responding?
Yeah, that happened to me with a very strange cartoon, I have to concede. I drew this cartoon showing a cow, yeah, what else? But a cow standing in front of a workbench, looking out at the reader. And on the workbench were these just amorphous shapes. And there's like a barn in the background, or whatever, this little scene. And I titled it Cow Tools. And I had been thinking, I remember how I got to this idea. I was thinking about how anthropologists used to define mankind as being, or man as being the only animal that made and used tools. And then they subsequently discovered that, well, even some birds and primates do that, so they had to change the definition a little. But I started thinking about, well, what if cows started made tools? What would they make? And my intention was that, well, you don't know what they are. Only the cow knows what they are. And, you know, here are this display of tools that a cow would use, and only a cow knows. But the reaction was unbelievable. I thought it was the end of my career, honestly, because I just started getting a barrage of phone calls and letters and
saying what?
Saying what does it mean? And that's what happened. Is that everyone was just utterly confused by it. And I think there was one newspaper that posted a some kind of a reward or something for anyone that could figure it out. And that was the first time that I realized that, you know, more than six people were looking at it. I had no idea.
And the fact that they didn't get it and it confused them really mattered somehow.
Yeah. It was a very confusing week for me. I was trying to sort out, what does this mean? I can't describe what that was like. It was just very strange. I mean, I lived in a little basement apartment and, you know, by myself and drew these things once a week. It's a very isolated kind of existence, and I'd mail them once a week into my editor, and we'd maybe talk about them.
Who was in a different city than you?
Yeah, I was in a different city, yeah. And then one day this thing happened, and I had, it was incredible. After I got through it, I realized, well, I guess this is good news, but at the time I thought, oh, geez, you don't do this. I mean, you don't confuse people or...
Did you print an explanation or a follow-up comic?
I did a lot of interviews about it. Oddly enough, doing something that wasn't funny but just confusing probably did more promotional work for me than anything else. It's just strange how that worked out. But I had a listed phone number and everything, so I mean, I was just picking up the phone and find myself talking to some reporter and explaining it.
I want to ask you about a story that that you've told in one of your books, and that I want to hear more about. Before you started working full time as a cartoonist, you had a job with the Seattle Humane Society investigating cases of animal cruelty toward animals.
Right.
And on your way to the job interview, apparently you ran over a dog.
I did.
What happened?
I did. That's the most unbelievable thing that's probably ever happened to me. That's the only time I've ever hit an animal, I think, driving. And I'm on my way to an interview with the Humane Society. I look back on it now and see the irony in it and everything. But at the time, it's mortifying when something like that happens. And I was out on a kind of a rural road, and it was like a pack of dogs, and they just, I don't know where they appeared from, but they were just heading from one side of the road to the other. They came out from the woods and were heading across the street, probably chasing a deer. And one of them, I just nailed it, hit it, thumped it really hard with the right front fender. and I stopped and I looked back and I saw the dog, and he actually moved off. He went on back off into the woods with the other dogs. But I mean, there's no way that he didn't feel that or something or happened to him. So I never knew what became of the dog or whatever, but I don't.
There's no way you're going to go after him and be in all this pack of dogs that you didn't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was, yeah, it's kind of hard to describe the setting, but that didn't seem really plausible at the time and the way things were happening and whatever, but, and it was all pretty fast. It wasn't like he was lying in the road there or something like that. It was almost as if he wasn't injured, in fact, but he had to have been, but.
So did you show up to the interview with blood on your fender?
No. I was kind of rattled about it, though.
Well, I can imagine,
You know, sitting there being interviewed, and it's like, oh, yes, and I...
Murderer!
The way, I
just, yeah. Gary Larson is the creator of the Far Side comic strip. He retired from the strip about 3 years ago. He has a new Far Side calendar, and he's currently completing his second animated film. Our interview was recorded last spring after the publication of his illustrated book about a family of earthworms called There's a Hair in My Dirt. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.